Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So another government announcement, lads. Fairly underwhelming from a sports spectator point of view. We're all on phase two or level two. So crowds of 200 are going to be allowed at matches with a ground capacity that exceeds 5,000. And if it's below 5,000, then it's 100. I'm pretty sure that's at level two. If we're in phase one, which hopefully we'll be going to, you can get to 500. So lots of different counties will have different capacities now, Conan, by the looks of things, because the good thing about this new roadmap is that at least the whole country has been treated equally. It looks like actually today Dublin is going to be moving back a phase to phase three.
Looks like the Munster hurling final is coming to Armagh after all. Yeah, look, it's disappointing. I think everybody thought once they were talking about more crowds coming in that there would be more than 200, because that's what we had initially. I know that was including the players, but yeah, it's just a little bit, especially around county final time. I was sort of hoping that it would be the same as up north, where it'd be 400, 500 being games, and that would be good for all the main club stalwarts.
That's what I don't understand, though. When you're talking about 200 being allowed into a county final, and then you have Micheál Martin saying there's nothing specific in terms of numbers for larger stadiums. It's like, does he not understand that county finals are played in the larger stadiums? So they're going to come back to the GAA with maybe a revised capacity for large stadiums like Croke Park. But the Tipperary hurling county final is on this weekend in Thurles, Connor. It's 50,000 capacity. And do they not understand that this is the same venue that they will probably allow an increased capacity in for Munster Inter-County Championship matches? Why about this are they not understanding? These are enormous stadiums and this 200 is madness.
Yeah, I think we raised that question at the weekend, and I think the provision that's in level two, it's something for, they mentioned there's a mention of large national and international events, and I took that to mean that excludes club matches. That's only going to count for inter-county, whereas if they were going by the guidelines that they themselves set out, that these stadia with a capacity in excess of 5,000 should be able to, a county final in Thurles should be able to hold the same amount as a National League game in Thurles, or if it was a Munster Championship game in Thurles later on. It's just a pity that for the Tipperary game this weekend and for the next few weeks, for a load of county finals that are taking place over the next few weeks, you're going to only see, I can't see us moving to level one for the time being, so you're likely to only see maybe 200, and then maybe down the line, for National League games and for Championship games, you might see 500 or over.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. At least the 200 canon does not include players and mentors and all that kind of thing. It's 200 supporters.
Well, that's something, and especially when you have a backroom team of 17, 18, then that's going to take the pressure off. And it is, like, even last night I was driving past the Skerries pitch and there was a ladies game on, and just people are just standing outside. And I mean, we've talked about this before, but they'd be safer inside, spread out around the pitch. They're all huddled up outside against the wall, and it's all the same in a soccer match in Balbriggan a few days ago as well. Like, it's just, it would be more wise to put them around the size of the pitch, but sure, look, we talked about this.
Yeah, the three main sporting organisations, so the GEA, the FAI and the IRFU, have come together. They've set up some sort of a working group, and they want to develop a roadmap for the safe return of fans into their stadiums. I presume this is for the higher profile inter-county games, you know, the games in the Aviva. They want to come with some, roadmap of how they can do this safely and go to the government with it. So I suppose this is still up in the air. It's a good idea from the three sporting organisations to come together and show the government we can do this safely. Connor?
Yeah, pretty much. And then I was just looking at what is kind of on, kind of come later in the year. So as well as the championship, I think there's you have a load of rugby matches that are scheduled to play, like at the home nations game, let's say Ireland against Wales and England. There's Nations League games for Ireland in the soccer that'll probably be at the Aviva Stadium as well. And then you have the championship too. So there is a lot of kind of, well, for the time being anyway, there's a lot of maybe larger scale games kind of planned for what would be maybe the bigger stadiums around the country, and specifically the Aviva Stadium for the FAI and the IRFU. So you would imagine that's exactly it, that the GA, the FAI and the IRFU will come up with, and I imagine they'll come up with a number as well that they think is safe to, you know, the GA will say, well, this is Munster Championship game is taking place in Semple Stadium and we reckon we can get X thousand in, and then just to be rubber stamped by the government. So just for everyone's sake and for the sakes of people that are going to be going to those games, hopefully it's a decent number and maybe a bit more than the 200 that we're getting for the county finals at the moment.
So to me, Conan, it looks like the All-Ireland final might not be in Croke Park. If Dublin's at phase three, for example, and somewhere like Kerry has moved to phase one, like, I mean, it would make more sense for the All-Ireland final to be moved out of Croke Park, right? Is this how this will follow to its logical conclusion? Or a better example, O'Moore Leash is at phase one and O'Moore Park can take 10,000 for the All-Ireland final.
look how that worked out.
I'm just thinking on my feet here, you know.
I'll just pick somewhere at random. Well, you have to think, like, why is the All-Ireland final in Croke Park? It's because it can hold the most people. Like, so yeah. Once that's not possible, especially if Dublin's in level three or whatever, and especially if, like, I don't want to bang this drum every podcast, but if up north is allowing more people into the games, or like, say, Parky Quay will allow more people into the games compared to the size of the stadium, then that has to be looked at. Like, you know, we have to go to the place that has the most fans in it, and like, that's definitely the fairest way to do it. Like, you know, having it in Cork is as arbitrary as having it in Dublin, I think.
Yeah, I see you giving out about Clonus. Are you giving out about it that Clonus isn't going to be the Ulster final venue, which is a huge break from tradition for an Ulster final? And they're using floodlights. They must be going to fix it on a Saturday night, and Clonus doesn't have floodlights.
Yeah, no, I'm not giving out about it. I just thought it was a nice handy excuse for them. I'd say they're happy enough to have it in Armagh, where they can obviously have a bigger crowd at it. I think somebody will be in Croke Park now messing with the floodlights so they can have it up north and like have actual fans there.
But that makes absolute sense. We talked about that. Armagh's a smaller ground anyways. It can allow more supporters. It's exactly what we talked about on last Thursday show.
It's going to happen, Willie. The All-Ireland is coming up north.
The Munster final in Armagh. You've heard it here first. That's all we have to say about this. Other big news here this week, Conor, is Paul Galvin has stepped down as manager of Wexford senior team. Now, I sent out a couple of text messages to see, is there any more to this story or what's going on? And I haven't got any reply back. So, like, I mean, this has gone to ground. So we'll take it at face value in that Paul Galvin has said that he's moved his family back over to the West because of increasing cases of the coronavirus in Dublin, and it's too far of a commute, for him to do. So you'll take it on face value at that. The other side of that is that, you know, you're only looking at another 4 weeks pretty much, Conor, of guaranteed football between the two National League games. He's done the 16 months without very few games, and now there's only 5 or 6 weeks left. It seems like a strange time to step away.
Yeah, I thought the timing is a bit weird. I don't think Galvin managed them in a championship game, because he's been in charge for 16 months. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Wexford might have been out of the championship by the time he took over.
Oh, they were, yeah. It's 16 months. He's just played a few league games. That's all he's done with, and a Auburn Cup games.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's not as if he's kind of like, I know they're doing okay in Division 4, but there's been a few kind of news lines coming out that time when he dropped Dahi Waters and a couple of players, and another few players left the panel of their own accord as well. But I suppose you have to take it at face value, Wooly. I think he's based in, I could be wrong, but I think he's based in Castlebar now, or living in Castlebar. I was just checking the commute to Wexford would be 4 hours plus each way. So
yeah,
if that was the way, it was never going to be workable. And maybe that's, I can't speak for Paul Galvin, but if he was going to be based there more long term, that's definitely not feasible. So the timing was a bit strange, but if you've done your digging and you can't find Anthony Woolley, well then we'll just take his face value and leave it at that.
What's he doing moving to Mayo? I know his wife is from Mayo, but at the same, there isn't even internet that over in Mayo, Conan.
I'm actually I'm more suspicious, Woolley, that you can find anything, that nobody's talking about this. What's going on? And it's 16 months, but the season's been shut down since February here. That's seven. He took over in June. When did he start training? October or whatever? I know you're looking at games and whatever else, but 16 months is a nice way. It's how you would sort of pad out your CV when you're trying to show that you were in a job for longer than you were. If you did give 16 months, why would you not just give an extra 4 weeks? Look, just personal life and whatever else, but I think I would have just sort of stuck it out, having come this far, gotten to the championship.
Yeah, Kilshi Mock could try and sign him now, Conor. It's too late for Sunday, or Saturday, but at the same time, there's a man that there's another year left in him.
We've an abundance of hardworking wing forwards, Woolley. I think we're okay. Paul Galvin, I know, of course, Paul Galvin would make any team, but I think as far as I know, he's closer to Castlebar, so maybe Mitchell's already made a coup there with Donny Vaughan a couple of years ago, so they might try and get another one in Galvin.
Right, so the Club Players Association have put forward two proposals for the split season, so they're not resting on their laurels here. I don't know about you two friends. I go to you first, Conan. I have a feeling the Club Players Association want to be the ones that have thought up of this new season going forward. They're pushing two new split seasons on us when the fixtures review have another three that it was discussed that the CP actually left. They left that group out of frustration. There is still two up for discussion that could fit into a split season, but the CPA aren't happy with that. They're out on their own now. They've left the fixtures review, and now they want to actually have their own ones. And they will be very upset if these two are ignored, because that was my information about their input into that fixtures review committee, that when their proposals weren't getting the consideration that they thought they deserved, they weren't very happy about this at all.
Well, I am so glad that you said this, because I saw the two proposals that they put through, and I was like, what? This is not their business to be coming up with the championship restructure. Their whole motto is fix the fixtures. So that's fine, that they're trying to create space for that. But then whatever the Intercounty or the GA want to do with that season, then that's up to them. The Club Players Association is just supposed to be getting a window for club players. And then I just find it really strange. I don't know, is it overstepping the mark? I don't know if that's the right term. But
No. To be fair, they had a seat in that fixtures task force. They had a seat on that, and they left it. So their input into what happens with that, you're right, that's gone now. So now they're just coming along saying, look what we can do. And to be honest with you, the two options they provided wouldn't blow me away. They both involve making leagues out of the provincial championships, so I don't think you need to do that at all. And they both involve moving counties out of their provinces to make up even number of teams, which will be a non-runner as well, Conor. Other than at least they're staying on top of this issue and not letting it go away. I don't know. They're starting to frustrate me a little bit.
Yeah, that seems to be it. I mean, to be, and they're probably striking while the iron is hot, in terms of there's a lot of buzz around the club game at the moment. So they probably think that it's as good as time as any to kind of be rearing their head again. Because as you said, they initially withdrew from the process because they were correct. I think they were pissed off at the lack of kind of the lack of role they seem to be playing in the fixtures process. But again, if they're trying to kind of make an impact with these, I was trying to kind of decipher them from the existing ones, and they absolutely don't blow me away. As in, like, they're making leads out of the provincial championships, whereas I was thinking, well, would you not just kind of if you're going to have a league process at the time of year that they want, would you not just have it as it is already, and that the tier one and tier two championships are going to be separated as they would have been this year, depending on league positions in Division 2 and Division 3. So yeah, I don't know. They didn't. I'd be like you. They didn't blow me away. But the only kind of thing I can put forward for why they're doing it now is that, as I said, there's a lot of kind of buzz about the club game, and maybe they think that their voice is like more likely to be heard now than it will be maybe later on in the year.
Yeah, so that's it. So I'm not going to go through their two proposals. People listening can look that up, but they're a little bit overly complicated for me. For me, the very obvious one is to not scare people away and counties away and provincial councils away by all this new fancy things. Well, we're going to move Longford to Ulster, and then the top teams out of their round robin will come down into a Champions League format. Stop messing with it. Play the provincials in March as a knockout cup competition, and then play your national league as your main competition. Why do you need to mess? Nobody's nose is put out of joint. The provincial councils keep control of the provincial championships, promote them. We know how Auburn Cup games can get, or early season cup games can get huge crowds, especially in Ulster. Imagine what you get in March waiting for an Ulster championship first round. It would be the same prestigious competition, in my opinion. And then your All-Ireland series is your national league. And what's fairer than four different groups? And there's nobody. Nothing here is torn up. It's changed. There's nothing happening. Conan, I get blue in the face. I don't know why. I don't think we need to get into a debate regarding this, because I know you favour the Champions League model, which is a part of one of those options that the CPA put forward. But I just think the cleanest way is to not change anything that we have. It's just to jiggle it around a little bit. And then there shouldn't be as much opposition as there would be by ripping it up and doing something different.
The only thing I really, really care about is just maintaining the window that the county season have. Now, I know that might sound unpopular, but like, it's too big. It's too important for everybody. And it unifies everybody. This club stuff is class. We all love playing club. We all love watching club. And you were talking about the drama that was coming in on Monday, right? But we don't all have an opinion on that drama, because we haven't seen it for the most part. We're just getting reports from different counties and whatever else, and that's fine. But I don't think that's sustainable if you reduce the county window. Like, you know, the same way we all love playing five-a-side, but we're all unified by the Ireland team. Like, we all watch the inter-county games and we all have an opinion on it. And I just think, like, that's the beauty of it. Like, having that in the background and having these arguments and thoughts about the inter-county game the whole way through the year. Like, that's the best thing. So whatever you want to do with it, just keep that window.
Yeah. So what window do you mean?
Like, just if it's February to August or whatever it is. I just don't like, I get worried about when people start saying, just play the championship and leave it at that. Do you know, it's like, come on, like, we need way more than that for the county game, because the club purists just want to get rid of the county game, or that's what they say. I think they would regret it if they didn't. Yeah,
I think that I do agree with the CPA split. I think from maybe February until mid to late August or mid to late July is fair, and then you have August, September, October, November, and the, you know, with the All-Ireland Club final in mid-December. I think that I don't think too many people would be in opposition to that split. And I do think that RTE actually doing these games with pundits, we've suggested this for donkey's years. And now that you see that it can be done and people do sit down, I take your point completely, Conan, that it's not the same. It'll never be the same as the inter-county game. It just won't. Quality-wise, interest-wise, but at the same time, it's still GEA. It's the window, and people love it. And I keep saying that when that hits provincial club stage and we have an RT Sunday game on the Saturday night and TG Cahir on the Sunday, for me, that's kind of the big time. And the All-Ireland semi-final then rolling on. And it won't be the inter-county, but it's not like the GEA will be losing its promotional opportunity. In actual fact, the GEA will have a window on national television all year round under this split season.
Testify.
Yeah. So there's no opposition here to that anyways. Conor, what do you think of that?
No, the only thing I was going to say about, like, Conan was talking about kind of keeping the intercounty window, which I get, but like, it doesn't have to be necessarily as long as it has been up to this point, which I think everybody would be in agreement, like that maybe like starting January with all the provincial competitions and then going on so far. Like, I get what he means in that, like, you know, people were probably putting too much importance on the club game based on what we've had for the last couple of months, which is out of completely unprecedented circumstances. But what RTE, what the GA and what the TV companies should have realized, I suppose, is that the opportunity should be there to place more emphasis perhaps than they have. Like TG Carr have been doing it the whole time. RTE have only kind of come to the game maybe in the last couple of years particularly. But that when the intercounty season is over, I don't think anybody's going to mistake that the club season is going to be nearly as big as the intercounty season, but that there will be still an appetite and people will be happy to have it once the intercounty season is over.
Yeah, and I suppose, I need to specify that for hurling, it's the exact same. Right now, with hurling, we have a national league and then we have another league for the championship. Under, like, a split season proposal, why not do the hurling exactly like the football? Play your provincial knockout championship first and then have a national league. Like, I mean, the national league in hurling, the first two divisions have six teams in it. You could go 6-6 and have five championship games to get into quarterfinals for your All-Ireland. Or you could join the two of them up and maybe have 10 teams and have nine championship games. Like, the football will have seven. So the hurling could either have five based on, you know, two sixes, or they could have, you could make it 10, for example, and have nine games. Like, that's your league championship then, played in the summer, and your knockout provincial championship with that all or nothing, you know, kind of element to it, kept bang when the season starts up. Let's get the pre-season done and try and win this provincial championship and offer some sort of bonus for winning it. I do think that that's definitely the way to go forward. Brian Fenton has been talking about supporters, and he's been talking about, he says, I'm dreading the rush for tickets, to be honest, because people come out of the woodwork at the best of times for tickets. That's with 82,000 people. I think no matter what, a crowd will add to the occasion. I think the crowd in the stadium will adapt and be as loud as possible. And then I was thinking, like, Conan, like, this is the first season where Dublin will not have the majority of support in any game in the championship, because if there's only, say, 2,000 allowed in Croke Park, number one, will it even be in Croke Park? And number two, there is no county that won't be able to take one half of that 2,000, you know, because usually when it's in Croke Park, like, the likes of Laois or Kildare might take 5,000, and then the other 40,000 are from Dublin. They have the whole hill, you know. Like, I mean, in one way, it's a great chance for Dublin to prove that the Croke Park crowd is not an advantage for them.
I think they've enjoyed having to do stuff like that in the past. Like, you know, when they had to come out of Dublin to play a game. Remember, they went up to Omagh for the Super 8 match, and I think were they already through, but they were sort of intent on going up there and winning just to show that, you know, they can do it. Like, especially on a cold midweek night in Tyrone or whatever it was. But the only thing I would say about that is I remember going to Dublin games, and like, you've played in these Dublin games as well, like, where the crowd are a deterrent on them, you know, when the team wasn't good. And, like, I was sitting, like, people would be roaring awful abuse at people like Kieran Whelan and stuff like that, where it's like,
yeah,
I used to think, Jesus, like, it must be awful playing in front of that crowd. And, you know, the team got really good despite that. And now, obviously, the crowd, I do agree, the crowd does help now, but I think the crowd can just as easily be bad, like, depending on what the team's like. And I think the team have just risen on their own, but sure, you already know that.
Yeah, well, I suppose they have kind of gotten over that nervousness that they used to spread through the crowd. I do agree that that did kind of work against them, but that's not the case now. If Dublin are 5 points now down, that crowd isn't getting on their backs now. That crowd is starting to support them to get them back in the game. So, like, they did that through their own kind of winning mentality. So I don't think that kind of is there. But there's no sport in the world where the majority of supporters is not an advantage. I don't think anybody would argue with that. So maybe they can disprove that. Fenton goes on and he's talking about, even in the club games, there'd be 10 subs or whatever. He said, if they celebrate a score, you can still hear it. Maybe it's all relative, but you can still hear it. We were playing Ballyboden and I got turned over. All these subs literally roaring. And that's the same feeling as an intercounty full stadium. What's the kind of joke, Connor? It's easier for, like, you know, to perform in front of 100,000 people than it is in front of maybe 100 people in a small venue. I'm just thinking of Brian Fenton after all he's won and all, you know, the crowds he's played in front of. Getting turned over in front of 10 subs really pissed him off and it's stuck in his mind.
I just can't believe that Brian Fenton got turned over. Maybe the reaction was not that they were roaring, that they were so surprised. It was more shock than actually kind of give it to Brian Fenton. But geez, I don't know about Brian Fenton. He knows more than me about difference between an empty stadium and 82,000 people. But I'd be thinking that a crowd can absolutely affect a player's mindset, that it's not the same between getting turned over in front of 10 subs for the opposition and getting turned over in front of a massive crowd. You know, it's like Brian Fenton is probably so steeled mentally that it doesn't affect him at this stage. But it absolutely is the case that, you know, some people, the reaction of the crowd, be it positive, they can get some encouragement off it, or it can absolutely drain their confidence whatsoever. And obviously some are more mentally strong than others. But yeah, the surprising main thing I took out of that was that Brian Fenton actually got turned over the club game. So well done to the one or maybe five people that had to do that.
But anyway, have you had that? Have you had that crowd, you know, when you give the ball away and you just hear the have you had that in a big stadium?
In the big stadium, it kind of gets drowned out. Maybe they will cheer the turnover rather than give out to you, you know. But like, I mean, I do accept that if you're over beside the opposition, kind of, you know, they're along the line and they have a few subs and you make a mistake and they cheer that would piss you off more. It's just more in your face than even in Croke Park, because you wouldn't really have that kind of maybe hateful reaction in Croke Park. You know, you the other crowd will just kind of cheer you on rather than really getting in your face cheering. So I kind of identified a bit about, you know, something happening close enough to the opposition's side of the field, and that is demoralizing. In a funny way, when you get turned over and they kind of do that to you, it makes you not want to chase. It makes you kind of want to feel that, whatever, rather than, that's really bothered me, I'm going to run back after him. I don't know if I'm making sense there, Colin.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. You sort of want to get out of the picture as well. Like, you know, sometimes I feel like they're almost laughing more at you after you've had it turned over, and then you're away running after it then as well.
Yeah, it's like you're proving them right. Got you, and you're back tearing after him to make up for the mistake. Instead, I just walk on, whatever, you know. I didn't even really want that ball anyways. Okay, lads, I want to move on to some refereeing in Cork here, because I was sent these last week by more than one person, so it actually kind of made me get interested in it. And there were two dreadful refereeing errors in Aeroge, which is Daniel Goulding's club. He scored 2-7. And Kiskeam. So this game was won by 1-3. It was 2-13 to 1-10. And the two goals that Aeroge were given were just completely dreadful, absolutely dreadful. One was a kick in, the player caught the ball, the referee blew that a mark is there available, the player put up his hand. By the time the player hit the ground, everybody had stopped, because when the referee blows the whistle and you put your hand up to claim that mark, that's a mark. The advantage is over at that stage. This fella just continued on. All the defenders had stopped. He threw it across to Daniel Goulding, goal. Right? And an even worse one was the next example, in that a goalkeeper caught the ball. He played it out to a defender. As the goalkeeper had passed it out, the ball was moving on out the field. But there was some verbals with one of the Aeroge forwards, and the goalkeeper ran into him and knocked him on the ground, and the referee gave a penalty for that. It was an off the ball incident, nowhere near the ball, and he decided that was a penalty. Like, Conan, I tweeted these out, I know you have seen them. Like, these are two absolutely dreadful refereeing decisions.
Yeah, and like the mark one as well, it's just the inconsistencies that a lot of referees are bringing to it. I remember the Ballymun game, these are innocuous ones, but Dean Rock was definitely one player who called for a mark and didn't get it when he should have. The ball was about a 40-meter pass and he caught it just inside the 45, and the ref probably didn't realize it. And then just what you're saying there about that first goal that Daniel Goulding scored, somebody else had called the mark and then they decided to play on then as well. So, like, you know, another referee then might just bring him back and tell him to take his free kick, or because he called for it and the game has stopped. It's just like when that's happening over and over, and this is a year into it, then it's, yeah, it's just it's completely unfair for the other players, and it's probably a bit unfair for the referees as well, but like they're making a bit of a balls of it.
Well, that's the thing, because Kevin Feely has been tweeting about this, Connor, and he says the forward mark rule in football really has been a shambles since it was brought in. Literally every second referee you come across has a different definition on the ruling of it, and to be fair to refs, it's hopelessly ambiguous. Worse again, it's now affecting the ruling of the midfield mark. So, like, I mean, I'm in agreement. I've seen enough club games now to know that this mark adds nothing to the game, in my opinion. It's not a skill to catch the ball into your stomach. There is confusion around the whole idea that if you don't call a mark, you can't be tackled for four steps, because that's not happening. The play just continues on. There's no need for it in the game in its current ruling, unless the kick pass is made longer and there's some kind of spectacular element to it. How is it benefiting the game, Connor, on the evidence so far from what we've seen?
No, I don't see it. The biggest eyesore for me is when somebody might be literally just outside the 45 and they kick a straight pass, maybe 20 yards, to somebody who's not even being marked, and that person could just catch the ball and butt up their hand and has a free shot at goal, which is... That's not within the spirit of the law. The spirit of the rule was brought in for, as you said, spectacular catches by a full forward. Say Kieran Donaghy in his pomp, who as soon as he caught the ball might have landed and been surrounded by four people. They were able to get the ball off him and they get a free out. You know, it was to reward high fielding like that. Whereas at the moment, that's the way it's being used is that like players under no pressure at all. Are able to just call the mark and have a free shot and goal. And that's before you get into the interpretation of the refereeing, which is what Kevin Feely picked out there and what you've mentioned. I mean, like, it really is the case that like every referee has a different interpretation, to the point that like some of them either don't seem to realize that if it's kicked from a sideline ball or kicked from a free kick, you can't call a mark. You know, loads of other different interpretations. And I get what Kevin Feely is saying as well, the difference that it's made to midfield fielding. So the midfield mark, which I think everybody has welcomed as like, and has rewarded high fielding, I think as far as I can see, it's been very positive. But now there's added confusion over that because of the added confusion that's caused over the advanced mark. And
just on the midfield mark, it's so great because it's usually a long kick. It's not like a 20 meter catch to the corner back can be rewarded in a mark. That's bullshit. That's not why. Like, if the midfield mark was that, it would be gone long ago. The midfield mark is great because you have to be outside the 45 to be able to catch the bloody thing. So there is an element of having to earn your mark.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, but that's the problem, is that because of the confusion that's drawn up over the advance mark, that spread to the midfield mark, which was, there was nothing wrong with it whatsoever. But that's like, I don't know, I played in a few games with it now, and like, you know, like there is obvious benefits for like people who have big full forwards, and maybe it encourages them to go more direct. But for the most part, I haven't seen anything that would convince me that this the advance mark is a better rule than what we had previously, to be honest. And it's, you said it's even different from the woolly mark, Woolly, which you would have pushed for a long time, which, as you said as well, would reward a more, it's a longer kick. It's probably leans to a more spectacular catch. But at the moment, I don't know, I don't think it's really working, and I'd say most people, if you ask them, would probably be in agreement with what Kevin Feely had to say there.
Yeah, well, you see, the mark that I was thinking of, this was back in 2015 that I started thinking about how can we improve the game, that these zonal defenders are an eyesore. It's horrible to watch. You kick a ball in and some fella's surrounded by four lads, they turn you over and they counter-attack. Is there no way of rewarding that fella that's caught that ball? You know, and maybe the zonal fellas will have to push out on the kicker then. And there was a whole theory behind bringing it in. Like, I'm not sure all those things are needed in the game now, Conan, because the zonal players are pretty much done away with. You know, there isn't that same surrounding the same players, because, you know, players are pressing all over the field a little bit more. So from that point of view, one of the reasons I wanted the mark to come in, they're all gone. The only kind of reason you want the mark potentially to come in from outside the 45, inside the 20, is maybe two or three times a half, maybe one or two times a half, there might be a bit of excitement of a good catch caught and a mark got. Outside of that, I don't think the mark is needed at all now in the game, really. Even my one. I think we should just do away with the whole bloody thing.
Yeah, no, you're right. It sort of just evolved over time, like, didn't it? And
yeah, it moved away from that. Like, I mean, and you talk about copycat managers. Like, what? It's nothing to do with the mark. The game changing. The game is changing because Dublin and Kerry, the All Ireland finals last year. Every manager in the country, the penny will have dropped, and they're all copycats that have said, "This is how you play Gaelic football. This is how you win."
Yeah, like you're rewarded for turning players over. You're rewarded for winning their kickouts. You're not rewarded for letting a team hit a ball wide. Like, you know, by getting every player in front of your post and making them take a bad shot. Like that's going to be necessary sometimes, but that's not how you win a game. And people have finally started to see that. And just on like the kickout mark, the big difference with that is that it's not breaking down an attacking move either. Like, you know, like Connor said about somebody just taking a handy mark and putting their hand up, or Dean Rock taking one at the age of the 45 and just taking a free, and just it stops the game. The kickout mark, as you said, it's rewarding a long kickout, and it's cleaning up that area in the middle of the pitch, and it's actually speeding the game up because it's getting everybody out of there instead of just fouling each other. Whereas the attacking mark at the minute, and probably in any form, even the Woolley mark, which we were all supporting, it's just stopping an attacking play. And as we've seen, like, you know, people like Mark Bradley just ignoring it and going on, it just makes more sense just to continue and keep playing.
Yeah. So just, I hope there's an option to get rid of the bloody thing, because it's not Gaelic football the way it is now, and it's absolutely desperate. Just finally, before we get to Zach Toohey, lads, Kerry have rejected RTE again. So they did this last year, and we could kind of understand it last year because they get about 10,000 in through the gate, into the actual stadium, whatever they charge then, and they're making a good killing. And you understand that. They've rejected them this year. This will tell you how bad the offer from RTE must be, that they've actually rejected them this year based on the amount of people that might subscribe to the live streaming, Connor. Like, I mean, Jesus, RTE, what is going on here? You cannot beat a potential revenue that a streaming product can actually give the Kerry County Board.
I'd love to know what's offered for these club games, because like if that is the reason, then it does seem like it. Like, you'd imagine that the most that Kerry could make out of this would be, let's say, if they'd probably charge a fiver. I doubt they'd charge any more than a fiver per match, and maybe what would you get it to 5,000, 10,000 people? So you'd be making maybe 25,000.
You're getting 10,000 to go in and watch it. You're not getting 10,000 to watch the stream. You'd be lucky if you get 2,000 or 3,000. I'd imagine.
Yeah, well, I'm just going on the Mayo semi-finals. Well, at their height there a couple of weeks ago, had about 5,000. That was for the Ballinan Knockmore game. So you'd imagine a county final, and especially maybe with divisional teams as well, that there might be more interest because there's representatives of various clubs too, as opposed to it just being one club against another. But it's like, it's ready for the rest of us that we just don't get to see it. And even like the product that I'm sure Kerry TV is fine, but we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that it won't compare to whatever RTE would have to offer, especially with the analysis and production and all that sort of stuff as well. So pity for the rest of us, but just have to get our Kerry TV subscription and bring it up to maybe 10,000.
Yeah, exactly. Right, we'll leave it there, lads, and we'll come back with Zach Toohey.
Advice he gave me back then was, we were in the Glenroy on a night out, and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, "You won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me." I said, "All right, well, okay."
That's great advice.
Yeah, it was. For you.
So he's just hit 200 appearances in Australian rules. It's Zach Toohey. What an achievement, Zach.
Yeah, thanks, Willie. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's kind of crept up. Doesn't seem that long ago I played my first game. So, yeah, quite pleased with myself.
And, like, I mean, have you processed how big an achievement it is, though? Like, I mean, it's not just an Irish player. It's only 5% of professional players in the AFL reach 200.
Yeah, I guess that I have heard that figure over the course of the last sort of week. Yeah, it is strange. I do remember playing with Satanta early in my career, and he used to always say 100 games was what he wanted to achieve. You know, he thought that would be remarkable. And I mean, I've been lucky with injury, as you know, and yeah, that's half the battle, really. Like, so I kind of got through the first 100 reasonably quick. And then, I don't know, I've just been kind of plodding away, ticking them off.
Yeah. Has it been something like, has it been on your mind that you're creeping up to it? I know you had a rib injury that had to postpone the 200. Like, I suppose it's just, you know, reaching that milestone and you're thinking about it maybe too much, no?
Not really, no. I mean, once I got to within a couple of weeks of it, I did start to think about it, and I knew Tig had fallen just short of that game's total. So that kind of put it a little bit in perspective for me, because obviously Tig was the guy making waves out here when I was kind of growing up, I suppose. So I started to think about it a little bit in the build-up to it, but no, I can't say I gave it a huge amount of thought kind of this year generally.
Right. Okay. Connor on the show here, the Geelong did a video for you. You must have got a little bit emotional watching that. Connor on the show got emotional. I didn't really, but at the same time, it was nice.
Yeah, I didn't either. Didn't bother me. No, I did. We watched it before the game, and I'd seen it myself a few days before that, and I watched it myself in the room alone before they published it on social media. And I was kind of going all right until I got to my parents, and then obviously it finished with the two lads. And that got me, because at that stage, I hadn't seen them for 10 weeks. They hadn't gotten here yet. So, yeah, it was nice. It was lovely to see. And some of the footage I saw of me in my first couple of years, I can still kind of remember. And it doesn't seem that long ago, but kind of brought it full circle in a nice way. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, the Portlaoise accent on you in the video when you're only a young fella.
Jesus. What it's worth, this, I cop an awful time about this when I go home. I promise you, hand on heart, it's not conscious. I'm not doing it on purpose. It's my hand was forced in the early days when nobody could understand me, and it was constant mockery. So, yeah, I've got some weird twang now.
Yeah, I'm not sure really what it is. It's definitely different, whatever it is. That was the thing, though, in the video, because like you said, you hadn't seen them in 10 weeks, the family and everything, and you're just in quarantine with the team in a hotel.
Yeah, so we left initially. We're only supposed to be gone for a month, but things in Victoria got worse over the course of that month, so we couldn't go back, basically. So, yeah, they didn't come for that initial month. And then all of a sudden we were shipped somewhere else in Australia for another month. And yeah, it kind of got to the 10-week mark and there was an opportunity to bring them up. But they, even once they got up here, they had to go and quarantine them 2 weeks. So I didn't see them for that 2 weeks. And
Right. Yeah,
it just kind of built the time. But yeah, at that stage, it had been 10 weeks and I hadn't seen them. And they only just got to the hotel 2 or 3 days ago.
Right. Okay. Geez, and that must have been difficult because I presume they're in lockdown in Melbourne then as well.
So Melbourne's in much more severe lockdown than the rest of Australia, which is why we had to get out. In fact, you know, all the teams had to get out of Melbourne.
Right.
Every team in the league is based in Gold Coast at the minute in Queensland. So, yeah, because it was so bad in Victoria, you just couldn't play games there. And it just became a really significant logistical problem to get all the families out as well. And, yeah, this was as quick as I could do it.
Right. Okay. So, like, I mean, every team, are you near each other all the AFL teams in hotels in the Gold Coast? You're spread out.
No, there is. Well, we're not. We're fine. But there are some teams who are bunking together in different hotels because, as you can imagine, we can't mix with public either in these hotels. So, each club either has a hotel to themselves, or it's a sizable hotel that's shared. But yeah, It was a huge financial burden for the AFL to get all these teams out of Melbourne because there's 10 of them, you know, so.
Wow, yeah. So, like, I mean, that's incredible. So even for the cost of it, even to book out a hotel, because, like, I mean, are fans allowed back in the games? I know you all took pay cuts back a while ago. I don't know if they're restored. Like, I presume financially it's a huge burden.
Massive, yeah. I'm not sure exactly what the figure is, but you're talking probably tens of millions for the AFL to get all the teams out and put in hotels and, with the crowds at games, there's only, I'm not sure exactly what the figure is, but it's not even half capacity, I don't think. And hopefully over the course of the next 6 weeks, that'll increase because finals is obviously the big stuff. But yeah, financially, everyone's taking a really big hit. And the AFL has forked out to keep the season alive because the alternative is lose probably hundreds of millions.
in TV kind of revenue and stuff?
Yeah, the TV deal is the big one. And obviously, if there's no games being televised, that is more than just a significant amount of money. You are talking 400 or 500 million lost on top of the probably 400 million the league has lost already.
Right. Okay, so I'm sure you love your teammates and all that, but like 10 weeks stuck together in a hotel, you know, little bit, ten, few in 10.
<ten. Yeah. laughs>
How are relationships? Are they breaking down and building back up and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, God, it's not been too bad. It's not been too bad. We're fairly well looked after. And, like, we can still get out and go golfing, and we can still we're just like sharks. We're not allowed to stop anywhere. We can go for a walk along the beach, but we can't sit on the beach. And we can go and get essentials from the shops, but we can't browse. And it's an unusual set of circumstances. But, look, like I said, our cooking's done for us, our washing's done for us, and we can golf, so it's not that bad.
No, it's definitely not too bad. So that's the thing. Like, I mean, you've all been tested, and even I suppose going into a shop, I'm surprised you're allowed to do that. If that would be slightly risky if one of you were to bring something back in.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it is, but the alternative is basically that full on quarantine for 12 weeks. And
yeah,
that was kind of never going to get over the line from anyone's point of view, for nothing else, for mental health. So yeah, there's, we can get out and about, but it's, I mean, we get tested twice a week, every week, and we have done for probably 15 weeks now, so I'm not sure there's a safer group of people in the country than us.
Right, okay, and that's fair. And like you said, so where's the family staying? Are they being put up then as well when they come up to you?
Yeah, they're in the hotel with me here now.
Okay.
Quite a few of the players have their families here now.
Right, okay. So, like, I mean, that's thrown out. Obviously, for passing the time, you know what I mean? There's no better way to keep busy than to bring the two children up.
Yeah, I thought I missed them until they got here. Yeah, immediately regretted that decision. No, it's nice to have them.
Yeah. Come here, so you're flying again this season. Like, I mean, your form is fantastic. Last season, you had a bit of a knee injury, even though you had a great season last season as well. It's kind of taken off for you as you've hit 30 already. You don't seem like you're slowing down at all.
Yeah, I did. I carried, well, like I said, Willie, I've been very lucky with injuries, but I did carry a knee injury through most of last year, and I still have to manage it. But did a full preseason, which can't be underestimated. Had a slight shift in position, which is refreshing because I've been a career defender and been pushed up the ground a little bit. So that was refreshing as well. And it always helps when the team is playing well. And right at the minute, although we didn't win on the weekend, we're probably putting together a couple of months of football that's as good as we've played since I've been at the club. So we're there or thereabouts this year, no doubt.
So what's the story with being pushed up the field? I was reading that you were tried in the forwards, but then you were put back into the defence again. I was wondering, Jesus, that hasn't worked out too well for you.
No, it's not a huge... Like, my role actually hasn't changed very much in many ways, but I'm just doing it a small bit higher up the ground. It's still kind of a defensive-minded role. It's a lot of transition running from one end of the ground to the other. So in that sense, I'm still doing the same thing. But yeah, I am. I've started playing a bit in the forward line, started playing a bit in the midfield, and far less time down back, which, like I said, nothing's changed in terms of what I'm actually doing, but it's in a different spot on the ground. And after 10 or 11 years playing, that's kind of refreshing.
Yeah, you've definitely is. Yeah, you've used that transition word that has crept into Gaelic football analysis as well. And I was looking at some highlights of the Richmond game, which he lost last week, and it was a low scoring game. And I was thinking, you know, is this the buzz in Australian rules now as well, kind of defending numbers and then transition, you know, with more of a running game?
Yeah, it's been, I mean, it kind of came in a number of years ago, and it comes in waves. You know, whenever a team has success playing a certain way, other teams tend to emulate that. Right. And right at the minute, yeah, there's a big focus on the kind of zonal defense and transition stuff. But your kind of hands are bound, because when one team does it particularly well, you just have to do it, because the alternative is they'll put a huge score on you because you won't be able to get it out of your back half. That's how it is here. So you kind of have to fight fire with fire. And the result of that can sometimes, although not always, but sometimes can be a slightly more dour affair. at least to those who maybe don't, you know, appreciate the tactics of it and just want to see high scoring games. But look, for the most part, I still think it's a great spectacle. But yeah, it is. There's a lot of this defensive transition focus.
That's the thing. And then just, you know, breaking forward through the hands rather than what we're used to with Aussie rules. I would have thought like the you know, the threat of a good mark could kick it over those zonal fellas anyways.
Yeah, you can. But the idea of transition is that everybody tends to flood back and getting that mark really hard.
Right.
The idea is, I mean, people press incredibly high up the ground and try and turn it over in their forward half.
And then drift back with the play.
You just, even if they're able to drive it out of their back half as far as they possibly can, at that stage, you're still not even halfway up the ground because the ground is so big, if you see what I mean. So,
yeah,
that's the idea. Try and turn it over in your forward half and lock it in.
I don't know if you've seen much Gaelic football, but we've brought that mark in. I wouldn't be a huge fan of it. Like, lads are catching a ball. Like, I don't know, there's kind of something about catching a Gaelic football into your belly from 20 metres away and getting rewarded for it. It's not something that you should even be rewarded for.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in use a whole lot. But, like, my opinion on these, and it's the same over here, is that I just never think the product's as bad as the rest of the world seems to think it is. I always think if you give it times, it'll, you know, the wrongs that people are perceiving will right themselves. And I'd be very, very careful about rule changes. I think they have to be done. They used to be very, very calculated with them.
Right.
But I agree with you. A 20-meter kick, getting paid a mark, just doesn't, wouldn't pass the eye test for me.
No, it's definitely, like, I mean, it's, and then there's confusion with referees and putting hands up and, you know, whether, because you're supposed to, you can play on if you don't take the mark and you're not allowed to be tackled for four steps. Look, it's just, it's definitely an added complication into Gaelic football. And like, you'd be worried that an All-Ireland final could be decided on a chap taking a kick into his belly in the last minute.
Yeah, it's not right. It doesn't seem right. And it's not a great spectacle is the other thing. If you're trying to improve the look of the game, there's plenty of rules, small little rules you could change here and there to improve it as a spectacle. I just don't think that's one of them. Or at least if you're going to pay a mark, pay it over 40 metres. It's got to be a long kick that takes something actually remarkable to hold on to. It's not going to improve the look of the game. And I don't know if that's where the game should go.
Yeah, so suppose you're an OG in terms of Irish players out there now. Are all the new players coming out giving you a ring for a little bit of advice? I saw Mark O'Connor thanking you. You're obviously at the same club, but would you get random phone calls from young fellas going out the same as you were 10 years ago?
Yeah, occasionally, yeah. There's a group message with all of the Irish guys in it, I think. But yeah, over the course of the last couple of years, I'll every now and then get a message or go for coffee with maybe some of the Melbourne-based Irish lads. So I mean, it feels a little bit like we're all in it together, you know. So, and everyone's very, very contactable these days. So yeah, it's happened quite a few times over the last few years that I've gone and met with a few of them.
All right, so I didn't know there's an Irish players in Australia WhatsApp group. So did Conor McKenna leave the group there just recently, or is he still on it?
He's still in it. Kieran Sheehan's still in it, and Kieran Byrne's still in it. So I think McKenna's got a few years of credit.
Come here, how come you haven't tried his dummy solo? Like, I mean, that's in your armory.
It is, I know. I know it looks great when he does it, but I'm not sure it's that many situations where it's practical. He found brilliant use for it against Adelaide one day. He just popped it. He just soloed it for no reason the next day. It was very funny. I get if you can sell a dummy and step around someone. But he was doing it and there's no one around him. And I did actually ask the umpires over here years ago when it was raining really heavily if I was running down the wing instead of bouncing it, because obviously it's tricky enough to bounce. I was tricky enough to bounce when it's dry.
Yeah.
But it's really risky when it's wet. And I said, if I was running down the wing, can I kick it to myself? Can I solo to myself? Would that count as a play of the ball and, you know, save me having to bounce it? Because obviously growing up at GAA, I could do that at full speed and it wouldn't slow me down and da-da-da. Apparently it wouldn't count as a play on the ball, which when you're talking about little rules that would improve the spectacle of the game, like I just said, I think the AFL could take a leaf out of the GAA's book, because I think that would look, that's a remarkable, you know, spectacle if you were to introduce it instead of bouncing, because I think it would take off after one generation.
Yeah, it wouldn't look too bad. So you're telling me McKenna was doing this loads of times. We only see the spectacular ones at home in Ireland.
I'm telling him, Sean, he did it a couple of times this year. It was bloody funny. He's he marches to the beat of his own drum, Connor, but super talented and will be missed. Hopefully, he'll slide straight back into the Tyrone senior team, I would have thought, but there might be a chance he ends up back in Australia at some stage.
Yeah, you wouldn't put it past him. Come here, you're in the last year of your contract. Like, I mean, you're 31 in December. What, like, are you currently negotiating with the club? And, you know, what's more important to you now is the length of the next contract, you know, more important than the salary, for example?
Negotiations are going on. And look, I think I've got at least a couple of years left. I think the club are pretty happy with me, although nothing's finalised. At this stage, realistically, you're on sort of borrowed time. I kind of understand that. But I think I feel like I've got quite a few years left in me. But I certainly am hoping to get at least a couple of years at Geelong. And then, to be honest, Wooly, I'd say whatever contract I get next, I will work off the assumption that it's my last. I hope it's not. I'll try and get another one after that again. But I'll set myself for that being maybe my last contract. And then if it's not, happy days. But if it is, I'll be right to go for Port Leash the following year.
Well, we need you back now. Like, I mean, definitely need some quality in the forward line, not to be too critical of the forward line. Cahalan can't stay bloody fit anyway, so that's a big problem for us.
Yeah, well,
he's the opposite of you.
Yeah, he's the anti-Dewey. I've always said I'd go back and play. I would 100% play with Port Leash. Again, as long as my kind of body lets me, and I still really want to play for Leash. I never played a championship game for Leash, so that would be nice. But again, that's all body permitting. I'm not getting any younger, as you pointed out.
Well, that's it. So, like, I mean, is there a policy in Aussie rules that over 30s only get a 2-year contract? You know, I'm thinking of Arsenal here. It's just jumping to my mind. Yeah. Like, is there?
Not necessarily. It's just the nature of the beast. You know, it's an incredibly taxing game. And you're only ever one significant or semi-serious injury away from probably hanging up the boots once you get to a certain age. That typically is the case, that you get 1 and 2 year deals.
Right.
But players far more exceptional than me may get longer contracts than that.
Right. Okay. So I was reading that it'll be 3 more seasons to get the games to get past Jim Stein. So that's your next target now. You've breezed past Kennelly and you've Stein's in your sights.
Oh yeah, breeze past Kennelly. Left him in the door. I'm not sure I'll catch Jim, but it would be nice.
You would need. Well, if your plan comes, if you get 2 years more with Geelong and you're thinking of maybe another one, you would, like, at the rate you're kind of eating up the games, you would go past that. But then you don't know again. Like, you could get an injury in the next two, you know, if you're to extend the contract. Yeah.
Like, as I said, I'm feeling the hits and the knocks a little bit more than I used to. It would take 3 full seasons really to catch Jim. Which, again, I'm certainly not writing off. I actually think I physically could play for 4 or 5 years, but those are famous last words when it comes to 30-plus-year-olds.
And would players in your position ever reach that age? Because, like, you're in a kind of all-action area of the field.
There is a few. But I guess not many. Again, if you were to put it in a, you know, percent of players playing, I would say the bulk of players who have, you know, reasonably long careers tend to pack it in between, I don't know, 31 and 2, that sort of age. But of course, you get the rare exceptional type. In fact, there's a 38-year-old playing for Hawthorn who just signed a 1-year contract extension. So, I mean, that's totally the extreme end of the scale, but it happens.
Right. So I presume during the lockdown, you've been thinking, you're in the last year of your contract, you've been thinking of what you might potentially do after the AFL. Like, I mean, you're doing podcasts over there. Like, I mean, is that something that interests you? I'm not sure punditry will be for you after lynching the Australian media the way you did about Conor McKenna. But is that something, like, a bit of broadcasting, podcasting, crossed your mind?
I really enjoy it. I do. And I've always thought, well, if you can do it, it just couldn't possibly be that hard. But it is. I do enjoy it. I enjoy conversations with anybody in any field. But for example, if I was talking to a highly regarded sports person, the last thing I'd be talking about is the actual sport and more about the person, if you get me. The punditry, I'm not sure I'd be any good at it. I'd probably dip my toe in the water at some stage, but I'd probably see myself ending up back home, Woolly, and I dare say whatever it is I end up doing, I'll probably have a side gig trying to do some a bit of media work as well, because that's what I enjoy most.
Right. Well, listen, we'll be looking forward to you coming home, both for Portlaoise and maybe a little bit of media work as well. So, Kamirzat, thanks very much for taking the call. Best of luck. You're playing Sydney. That'll be a handy one for you, but you need to get over this Richmond kind of blind spot as well if you want to get, if you're thinking of you're thinking of winning it out.
Yeah, big game this weekend, and this could be the year. I hope it is.
Listen, best of luck, Zach. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Wooly.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat and have a shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in there. I don't know. It was pure luck, now, in fairness. Pure luck. But it's fucking bullshit, as you've seen yourselves.
Okay, lads, so games at the weekend. So we've three county finals. There's loads of county finals on this weekend. Like I say, it's all starting to heat up. Three finals on TV. RT on Saturday night, we have Doon versus Na Piarsaigh at 7 p.m. RT Doon, a Munster club hurling match. Who would have thought it? The big team news here, as we know, is Dara Donovan and Richie English are out for Doon. Doon have never won the county title in Limerick. They're playing the Piarsaigh, who are one of the super clubs. I can't see how this is going anyway other than the Piarsaigh, to be honest with you. It would be difficult enough for Limerick to be doing it without Dara Donovan and Richie English, never mind their own club team. They have lots of young lads coming up, had a great win in the semi-final, but at the same time, this is just not going to happen, Conan.
just as plain as that. It's a hard no from Willie. There's a lot to be said, though, wasn't there, for like reaching the final without your two big men. And I have now, I don't know if it's people just trying to send me off on a wild goose chase, but I was doing my inquiries and I heard that Darrow Donovan is a potential to make a return for the final in some state. But
ooh, geez, all those hurling sources you have. Jesus. can I get your address book?
But
Colin's little black book of hurling contacts.
It's very, very thin. But I do know Doon have been knocking on the door the last few years, and like they were in the final 2018 semi-final last year. So, like, I don't know. I just wouldn't write them off completely. Pat Ryan lorded it for him. He scored 7 points the last day out. So, you know, like they've got a bit about them. And if Darrow Donovan, if my sources are correct, and if we all play a bit, then who knows?
Well, that changes it. I'm still going for the Piarsaigh anyways. Then on TG Cahir on Sunday, we have two more finals. We have Loughmore Castellani going for the double. First leg is the hurling versus Killadangan. Killadangan obviously lost the final last year. Killadangan are slight favourites for this one. I contacted some of my hurling contacts, Conan, to get a little bit of information. We all know that Killadangan are a young team. They won the U21 last year. They were very inexperienced in last year's final. We know their manager is saying that they want to atone for that. That hasn't sat well with them. Like, not performing on the day against Borrisley. We know Willie Connors makes them tick in midfield. And one important point is, last year they couldn't settle on a free taker. There were loads of different lads taking the frees, and they missed a good few against Borrisley in the final. They have Billy Seymour now taking them. So at least they have a regular free taker. I don't know about Duke Connor, but you won't win anything without a regular free taker. And is that not a guarantee? Because no matter what, when you can actually switch a light in your head on the field, if you see two or three different lads taking frees and they're missing them, it's all right to foul.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Because you know that they haven't settled on a free taker themselves, and that like confidence isn't going to be high. And that's not going to only affect them in the frees. If somebody who had been taking frees and is missing them, it's going to affect him in general play as well. So the fact that Killadangan have sorted that out, you know, it should mean a lot for them as well. And the experience as a young team, the experience of having been in the final last year as well, they had a really good victory. Didn't they beat Drum and Inch in the semi-final really well, as far as I remember? So as long as, so once they got the free decking sorted, they got that bit more experience. Now they just have to look after the McGraths, but I think they're slight favourites and probably deservedly so for Sunday.
Who's favourites in Mayo then? So we have the second game on TG Cahir is the Mayo County Final. Both games live. So 3:35 Brafey versus Knockmore. Who's going to be shitting it more going into this game? Because Knockmore haven't won it since 97. They've lost five finals since then. Brafey's never won it and they've lost three of the last seven finals. Like, I mean, this is both teams are going to be bags of nerves, are they?
So Brafey are slight favourites, but what I would say on that, Willie, is that the Knockmore are a very young team, so I'm not sure how many of them. Obviously, Kevin McLaughlin, Peter Knock, and Darren McHale, I'd say Shane McHale as well, from a couple more from the last final they lost, which against Castlebar.
Yeah, but there's still pressure as a club, you know. Like, Jesus, we haven't won it, you know, and we don't usually lose finals. Now we've lost, you know, that's, I don't know, it might be going around players' heads.
No, you're right there, but the one comparison I'd say, the reason I was making that comparison, I'd say, is that a lot of the Brafey team have been around for all three of the finals that they've lost since 2013, I think.
So right.
There might be a bit more kind of baggage, like with Brafey coming in. Brafey are slight favourites as well. It's very slight favourites. I suppose they ended up coming out of the group of death, beating Mitchells, losing to Westport, drawing with Westport in the group, and then ended up beating them in semi-final. So I'd say that's what's kind of made them favourites. But it's very slight. I mean, I talked here, I think, about Knockmore being very impressive against Ballina. And that was against them beating a kind of a tired-looking Ballintober team in the quarterfinal as well. I've just been very impressed with them all year. Any bit I've seen of them, Willie, just they play to a system. It's not overly defensive, but they tend to get a good few bodies back. Then they break at pace, and they have really impressive strike forwards in Peter Nocton and Aidan Orm in the corner. And then they've Darren McHale at centre forward. He scored two goals in the quarterfinal that was on RTE.
Yeah.
And then Conal Dempsey, Ray Dempsey's son as well, plays a wing forward and just really is like an energizer when he just gets up and down the pitch. So I have a slight inkling for Knockmore. I didn't even mention Kevin McLaughlin's performance in the semi-final as well. I have a slight inkling for them as well. I really think it's as simple as, and this sounds very straightforward, but it's how brave you manage Kevin McLaughlin and how Knockmore manage Aidan O'Shea. I really think that's going to make the difference.
Jeez, I never would have guessed that bit of analysis. Yeah, Connor. Like, I mean, that's why we have your local knowledge to lean on in Mayo.
I realise how ridiculously simplistic this is, but you're coming off the back of Kevin McLaughlin absolutely tearing Ballina to shreds.
I'm only joking. I know. I understood your point. Come here, talk to us about Kilshima Balla, the might of Balla, up from junior 2 years ago, now going to win the intermediate. Your game's on Saturday, is it, or is it before the senior?
You know, it's on Saturday. It's actually been moved back to 8:00 now. So it was meant to be at 7:00, but because of crowds being allowed now, the junior final is going to be at 5:00, and they're going to wait for everybody to clear out so we can get. There can be 200 at the junior final and then 200 for the intermediate final as well. So, yeah, we're on at 8:00 under lights in McHale Park on Saturday night. So
she's a desperate amount of time. That's torturous for a county final, waiting until 8:00 that evening. Like, I mean, Jesus, hard enough to wait till 2:00 for a county final with the nerves going. You'll be eating your breakfast, dinner and tea before the bloody match.
I might get four meals in, I think, before the game, especially if the little one has me up early on Saturday morning. Yeah, so it's like, I think it might be the latest GA match I've ever played. So, like, yeah, I mean, this week has been long enough. So Saturday is going to crawl, but I suppose at least we're all in the same boat. So it's going to be a really long day, and then by the time 10:00, 10:30 on Saturday night as well. So
that's what I mean. The pubs will be even closed. The pub restaurants will be closed by the time you're marching down the street with the cup ready to go in and get your €9 meal. Sorry there now, lads. You know, that's it. 10:30, the last orders. You just go home, and that's it.
That's probably going to be it.
back to a house party. That's it. Well, no, you see, you're not allowed more than how many in the gatherings. Yeah, so yeah, you're pretty much screwed.
Six people from three households. Yeah, so who knows what the young fellas on our team, our Ball team, have planned if it goes their way on Saturday night. But like at my age, Wally, come 10:30 on a Saturday night, I'm probably going to be happy to get to bed at that time. Maybe a couple of drinks on Sunday anyway. But that's. Yeah, it's going to be really weird finishing up at McHale Park at that time. It'll be probably 10:30 before we get out of there.
Like, Connor, that sounds amazing. Like, you know, because we were talking about you retiring after this year as well. You know, imagine you just placing the little medal on your side cupboard and just going into bed of a good day's work and your career's finished. That's
Hey, Connor, I told Willie I'd give him the exclusive on Monday, but not until then. So my retirement until then.
So the Mayo Neon News podcast has been trying to start a bit of trash talk with us. Apparently one of their contributors plays with Bala. So not trying to add to the pressure on this, Connor, but if you don't win this on Saturday, just forget about any sort of phone calls ever again.
Terrible. Especially on Monday morning. Yeah, Ger Flanagan, he writes for the Mayo News, so he does the Mayo News podcast as well. I haven't listened to it yet this week, but he was on it on Monday. So actually, I don't know if you saw in the replies to that little bit of trash talk from, that was Ed McGrail, a Mayo News stalwart and a Mayo News podcast stalwart that started that. But one of the replies was from a fellow I used to play with, Kel Chima, and he said that they're referring to it as El Podcastico, which
very good. Very good. I saw that. All right. That was a classic. Yeah. El Podcastico. Come here. Just one thing Connor said there, Conan, when he was talking about Ray Dempsey's son playing a wing forward. Do you say that in Derry? Do you say a fella plays wing back or wing forward, or do you say he plays a wing forward or a wing back?
I've never heard a wing forward before, no.
Oh, well, in Leash now, you'd say he plays a wing back. Why the A is put in there, I don't really know, but that's just what he plays a wing forward.
That is the craziest thing I've ever heard, to be honest. do you say he plays a centre back?
No, if you play centre back, you only play a wing back, or you play a wing. You don't even play a corner. You would play a corner forward. No, you play pretty much the wings, Connor, is it?
Well, no. So you and Lee, she said, plays a wing forward and wing and corner forward. We say we don't put the A in there at all.
You said he plays a wing forward. You actually said it. That's what reminded me.
I thought I said wing forward. If I did say a wing forward, it's the first time I've ever said.
I have to listen back. Maybe that's just what I was trying to hear. Anyways,
pre-game nerves, Willie. Pre-game nerves.
There's the other county finals to keep your eye out for, lads, is the hurling final in Dublin, Coola Ballyboden. A huge game there. 2018 champions versus 2019. You'd imagine Coola will come out of that one. Tyrone County final. Surprised this wasn't on television, Conan, but I presume Tyrone, though, are for the same reasons as Kerry, Trillick and Dungannon. You imagine Trillick will come out of that one. The Monaghan County final, a huge game here, Scotstown Ballybay. You imagine Scotstown will win that one. Roscommon County final, St Bridges versus Pádraig Pearse's. Very big game as well. I was interested to see Benny O'Brien, the St Bridges manager, was quoted on GA.ie, and he was talking about how they've a really young team. Whenever you think of St Bridges, you think of them struggling on a little bit with that brilliant 2012 All Ireland winning team, and they have 8 or 9 of their team were under 20 last year, so they've gone back during the time, you know, as that team was losing. They'd already been doing good work at underage level, and now they're back with a senior team. Even in my head, it's still all that old team, but it's not. It's completely 8 or 9 under 20s, and they've started all over again. So I'd be very interested, for example, to see them.
Yeah, no, like that's going to be a cracker. And not to drag it back to Ulster, but I was thinking about Connor when I saw the Trillick v Dungannon game, because this is a good excuse for him not to retire. In 2014, these two teams met in the intermediate final, and now they're meeting in the senior final. Dungannon actually won that day as well. So Connor, 6 years time, you're 42.
What year was that? Six years ago?
Yep.
Is there
well, I was actually looking at Knockmore. The last time Knockmore won the county final was in 1997, and who did it beat in the final? I nearly fell off my seat. Kilshima.
Our first and only senior county final, Willie.
Jesus.
Very, very, very strong team back in 97, and didn't really build on it then after that, to be honest. Knockmore that year actually went on to contest the... it shows how good Knockmore had to be, Willie, that they went on to the All-Ireland final that year and lost to Crossmilligan. And we know from examining Crossmilligan's record on Monday that there's no shame in losing a final to Crossmilligan. So, yeah, no, we were a senior final in 97 and relegated soon after, because the last time we won an intermediate final was 01, 4 years later. So, yeah, it was a brief flirtation with the senior county final. But who knows, if Conan is right, we could be back contesting one in, 6 years' time, which would be 2026. And I won't be
the Wicklow County final is on as well as the football final. Baltinglass, one of the huge teams in Wicklow, play Tinahealy, who I don't think they've ever won it. I think maybe they might have won it. It's a long time ago, maybe 1984 or something like that. One other game I want to draw your attention to, lads, is my team, Johnstown Bridge, are in the quarterfinal against Moorfield. This is their big chance, lads. Look, this is it. And I'm tired of the teams that I'm kind of half rooting for losing. I'm tired of Johnstown Bridge being the nearly men. You're too good for this, lads. I'm delighted to drew Moorfield, because this is a one chance for them to get over this kind of mental block that they have, beat the big team and go on win the Kildare County Championship. So expect Moorfield to absolutely hammer them, and we can have a look, a bit of a laugh at it on Monday. So that's it. Johnstown Bridge versus Moorfield quarterfinal. There you go. Another one of my tips. So it's the kiss of death. A fella sent me a message on Twitter saying, which is your team in football in Cork, Woolley? I just want to know whether to give up on the championship. Right, lads, we'll leave it there. So Johnstown Bridge, we'll all be looking out for that result, lads. Maybe they can turn the whole thing around. Right, we'll leave it there, boys. We'll be back on Monday and we'll review the weekend as usual. We'll talk to you then. Oh, you won't be here, Connor, depending on results, I presume.
Depending on, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Give me a call.
Right, listen, talk to you Monday. Good luck.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.